We're on Kuf Nun Zayin Amid Aleph, 10 lines down, beginning the new Mishnah. The Mishnah deals with the unfortunate situation where you have close family members who both died in very close succession, but we don't know who died first and the halachic issues that could arise from such a situation. The Mishnah begins, if let's say, Nafal HaBayis Allah Va'al Aviv, if a house collapsed on him and his father, oh, Allah Va'al Morishav, or it fell on his person and some other Morish, some other person that he stood to inherit, of course, that means that on the assumption his father, or whoever the Morish was, died first, then this other person would have inherited him. We don't know who in fact died first. Now, furthermore, the case is, V'haysa Allah Ksubas Isha, Ubal Chov, the son, let's say in the case of the son and the father, had some debt. It could be his ksuba debt. Ksuba, of course, obligates the estate to pay the widow upon the death of the husband. So whether it was that debt or balchov or some other debt, some other creditor who this person, this deceased son, owed money to. And the case is that the son had zero of his own assets to pay off the debt. And so the only hope for the creditor is that the father died first, which therefore means that for some amount of time, even if it was just for a moment, the son came to possess the estate of the father. He inherited the father for that moment, and then the son died. But that would mean that the son was in possession of property that would be at play over here. That would be something that the creditor could go after. And so a dispute arose with the Yorshei Ha'av Omrim, the father's inheritors, in other words, the next closest of kin. They claim that HaBen Meis Rishon V'Yachrakach Meis Ha'av, that the son died before the father, and therefore the son died with nothing, and his creditors have nothing to do with us, they have no claim against us, for the son never came into possession of the father's estate. Whereas Ubalei HaChov Omrim, the creditors though, claim HaAv Meis Rishon V'Yachrakach Meis HaBen, we say the son died after the father, which means that we could go after this property since the son was momentarily in possession of it. So now we have a shibud, we have a lien on that property. Our agreement with this debtor was that any property that he acquires will be encumbered by the debt, so we can go after the property. So what is the halacha here? The Mishnah brings a dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as to the halacha in this case. Beis Shammai Omrim, Beis Shammai says, Yachloku. The halacha here is Yachloku. These disputing parties divide the amount in question. And the creditor is paid half of the debt that's owed to him. But if Beis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel says, no, Nechasim Beches Kasan. Beis Hillel argues, he says, look, what do we know? We know that the Yorshei Ha'av, his next closest of kin, definitely inherits some amount of the property, no matter what happened here. Even if the father died first, there's no one questioning the fact that these people rightfully inherit this property. Now, this creditor comes along with the possible claim that maybe I have a claim too. Maybe the father died first, and if that happened, it means that I do have a connection to this property, I have a lien on the property. So it's a situation of a maybe against the definite. So Beis Hillel argues for the principle of Ein Safik Motzi Midei Vadai. Somebody who shows up in court and he says, maybe I'm owed money. And the opposing litigant has a definite position in the case. He's definitely a Yoresh. No one's questioning his connection to the money. So the halacha is, the Safik can't take away from the Vadai, the Safik loses. And so the creditor gets nothing according to Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai, however, argues that it's not really true. It's not merely that the creditor maybe has a claim to the property. For in Beis Shammai's opinion, a creditor that has a document that says that, you know, this person owes me money, I lent this person money, so it's omed legavus, it stands to be used to collect with, that document doesn't merely represent a claim that he has on somebody, but rather the halacha views that document he has in his hand as, it's as if he already collected the property. He just has to practically get it into his possession, but holding that shtar that says this one owes him money is as if he already collected it. So now it's not merely, oh, if the father died first, then I would have a claim against this property. No, the creditor's argument is that if the father died first, then that property is already mine, it already belongs to me. So according to that, the inheritors don't really have any superiority over the creditor. And since, of course, we have no idea what really happened there, who died first. So Beis Shammai says, the halacha is we split it. Ms. Hillel's opinion, though, the possession of a document that says this person owes money is not tantamount to having already collected it. And so, according to Beis Hillel, it remains a situation of maybe I have a claim on this property that you definitely have a claim to have possession of. So Beis Hillel says, therefore, the property is completely kept by the inheritors and the creditor gets nothing. Where begins the following discussion? It's not Hussam. We learn a Mishnah there in Paraget Pashat at the end of our Masechta. We will study a Mishnah that says as follows. The Mishnah says, Amalves chavero mishtar. Somebody lends his friend money with a document. The loan is recorded in a document. The halacha is gove minechasim mishubadim. The document empowers the lender to collect properties from the borrower once the money is due, even from nechasim mishubadim, that is, properties that were purchased from the borrower subsequent to the loan. The lender can go after those properties and seize them from the purchasers. That's an automatic assumption of how it works in the case of a loan recorded in a document. And this is not considered unfair to the purchasers because when it's written up in a document, the word gets out. So it means the purchaser failed to do his due research and discovered that the property he was purchasing was encumbered. There's a lien on it. So we don't feel bad for the purchaser when the property is later seized by the lender. That's if the loan was done through a document, al-yidei'edim. But if it was simply an oral loan, it was done in front of witnesses, was not recorded in a document, the halacha is, gova minechasim b'nei chorin. The lender later may only collect from nechasim b'nei chorin properties that are still by the debtor. If the debtor happens to still have some property, the lender could collect that, but he cannot go after properties that were sold even after the loan. Because in this situation, it would not be fair to the lekuchos to seize the property they purchased. How are they supposed to know about this loan? It wasn't even recorded in a shtar. And so in this situation, the lender cannot seize properties from the purchasers. So those are the basic rules. With Bayi Shmuel, Shmuel had a question. Although, clearly, any properties that the borrower owned at the time that he took out this loan are going to be subject to this lien, and the lender may afterwards seize them to pay for the loan. What about properties that are purchased later on? That is, what if they even specifically wrote into the document, di'ikni? Even properties that I will purchase should be subject to the lien. Bekana, and indeed, the borrower later acquired some properties, amount. What is the halacha? Is that language effective in actually creating a lien on those future properties, the properties that he purchased later? The Gemara explains the question further. The Gemara says, Aliba de Rabbi Meir de Amar Adamakne Dover, Shalom Baleolam Loti Boilach. According to the Tana Rabbi Meir, who says that a person could actually affect the Kinyan, do a legal transaction even on something that does not yet exist. It's not in the world yet. The classic example is somebody purchases fruits of a tree, just the fruits have not grown yet. According to Rabbi Meir and others, that works, even though the fruits aren't here yet, it's still a valid kinyan. Says the Gemara Loti Boilach, according to that opinion, you should have no question about the halacha of ikni, the vadai kana. Certainly, according to Rabbi Meir, once the borrower later purchases the properties, if they agreed originally that the lender's lien should be applied to those properties, then that is certainly effective. Because clearly Rabbi Meir is not concerned that the object that you want to do the transaction on isn't here yet. Ela kiti boilach. But who should you have this question according to? Aliba the Rabbanan. The question is according to the Rabbanan, the Amri, ain't on the makne davar shelo b'leolam. According to the other position of the Rabbanan, that if you try and purchase fruits of a tree that don't exist yet, the Rabbanan say that kinyan does not work. The question is, would they similarly invalidate a shibur, a lien, the idea of putting a lien on future properties, properties that will be purchased later? Rishpam offers two possible reasons why this case would be different, why maybe the Rabbanan would recognize the shibur on future properties. He first points out that the fact is that the properties that this borrower will eventually purchase already exist. They are in the world, just that they're not in the actual sphere of this borrower. He didn't actually purchase them yet. And maybe since the land did exist the whole time, maybe therefore it's not as abstract, and therefore the Rabbanan would say this is fine. If you said the ikni, if you included, if you said there's a lien even on future lands, and those lands will be subject to the lien. Furthermore, the Rishpam suggests that it could be that even though Norman of Halacha would say, according to the Rabbanan, that this does not work, he didn't have them yet, so the Shibut should not apply to those future lands. However, it could be that the Rabbanan instituted a special measure over here to encourage lenders to be willing to lend money, knowing that they could seize even the properties that the borrower purchased later. So this will make lenders more comfortable in giving out a loan. So that was Shmuel's question. The Gemara attempts an answer. Rav Yosef said, Toshma, come and hear proof from the Mishnah in Ksubas. The Mishnah discusses a case where a lender produces a document which says that this borrower borrowed money from him. He says, okay, pay me the money. And the borrower says, no, I paid you already, and my proof that I paid you the money already is that subsequent to this loan, you went and sold me property. So the borrower argues that if I still owed you the money, you would not have given me the field. You would have just taken the sale money and collected that for the debts that I supposedly still owe you for. So clearly I paid you that already. And then you went and sold me a new field. And the opinion of Admon there accepts this argument. He says, yeah, it's a clear proof. They must have paid the debt money already. But the Mishnah then brings, V'chachamim omrim. Chachamim say, no, zeh yipikeach. This one was smarter than the average bear. It is, the lender did this on purpose. He went ahead, shemachalasakai, he sold this land to this borrower. Why did he do that? If this borrower still owed him money, he should just take the sale money, not give him the field. The answer is, mipneishu yachal lemashkano alav. The lender wanted to specifically provide some property to the borrower, sell him in a separate field, in order so that he'll be able to seize the field if the borrower defaults on the debt. That's why the lender would do this. So it's not a proof at all that the borrower paid back the money. So if Yosef points out, what is the Mishnah saying? The Mishnah is telling us that based on the lien created by the original loan, that authorizes the lender to seize this field that the borrower purchased later, way after the loan. So the Mishnah apparently proves that ikni vikana does work. If they agreed at the time of the loan that even subsequent properties should be subject to the lien, then indeed those future properties will be subject to the lien. But the Gemara deflects the proof. Amrle Rava, Rava said to Rav Yosef, he says, that case, you're talking there about the question of the lender taking land that the borrower himself is still in possession of. Yes, that he purchased later, but he himself has that land. He didn't sell it to somebody else. Mine kamar. You want to bring a proof from a case where he himself, the borrower himself, still possesses the land. Says Rava, that's not a proof to our issue, to our discussion. For mine, the fact that a lender could take property from the borrower to satisfy the debt, regardless of when the borrower purchased it, is not remarkable at all. For if somebody lent the person money, and now it's time to pay, the halacha is afilu miglima d'alkas pay. The lender has every right to seize even the shirt that's on this guy's back, take the coat off his shoulder, if necessary, to pay back the debt. The fact that the lender has a right to do that has nothing to do with our question of ikni. Rather, kikam iboylan, what specifically are we asking here? The ikni kana umachar. It's specifically where, let's say, Reuven lent Shimon money, and he said there's a lien on any properties, even those that you purchase in the future, and Shimon indeed later purchased the property and then sold it to somebody else. Let's say he sold it to Levi, or the ikni kana vehorish. Or the same question would apply if after the loan Shimon acquired property and then died and bequeathed it to his yoresh. It was inherited, let's say, by his son. In these kind of cases, we're asking whether the special power of Sheba that normally says that you can even seize the property from a purchaser or inheritor of that property, does that apply in a case where the borrower didn't own that property at the time of the loan? So that's not so simple. The notion that the lender, you know, acquired to some extent the property that did not, you know, for practical purposes, exist yet, the buyer didn't possess those properties yet, that's not a simple matter at all. And so we still have this question. We don't have an answer to this question as of yet. Gemara says, Amar Rav Chana. Rav Chana says, Tashma, come here, proof from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah taught us this case of Nofel Abayis Alav, Yalaviv, Arlov, Al Marishav. So let's say the house fell on a father and his son, and we don't know who died first. And Vahaisa Alav Ksubas Isha Ubalchov, and the son owed money, either for the Ksuba or some other creditor. And now there's a dispute. Yerushayav Omrim, Haben Mesushim Yagam Mesaf. the next of kin of the father. I want to claim, of course, that the son died first, and therefore you creditors have nothing to do with this property. Whereas the creditors claim Ha'av, Meis, Rishon, etc. They claim the father died first, therefore the son inherited the father. And so we have a claim on that property that the son was in possession of before he died. So the Gemara says we seem to have a proof from the Mishnah. For v'isak edaitach di'ikni kana u'machar di'ikni kana v'horish lo mishtabed. If the answer to our question is that it doesn't work, that according to the Rabbanan that you can't be makna davar shelo b'olam, you simply cannot create a lien on future properties, that is, if the borrower purchases property later and then it transfers to a third party either through a sale or through inheritance, if you're telling me the halacha is that such a lien cannot be created, then seemingly our Mishnah's halacha doesn't make sense. For nehina midav misbereisha, even if what the creditor claims that the father died first is true, why would that give the creditor a right to seize this property? The iknihu. This is a case of ikni. We're talking about property clearly that came into the debtor's possession only way after the loan. So it must be, we see from the Mishnah, that ikni works. And if the debtor agreed that even properties that will come into possession of in the future should be subject to the lien, then they are subject to the lien. But the Gemara deflects this proof too. I'm related to Rav Nachman said to Rav Chana, Zeira Chavrin Tirgama, our friend Zeira, explained, interpreted the Mishnah. And the Mishnah does not mean necessarily that the creditor can seize the property based on the conventional system of Shibun, the regular concept that based on a lien, the creditor can seize the property from a purchaser, from a yoresh. No, that's not what's happening here. Rather, the obligation in our Mishnah is based on the concept of mitzvah ala yisomim lifroa chovas avihen. The Rabbanan said that orphans that inherit an estate and the father owed money, even if it's a case where technically the creditor doesn't have a regular shibud, a regular kind of a lien on that property, but still, orphans should take care of the father's debt if they have land from the father's estate. So that's really the operating principle of the Mishnah. That's why these creditors say that if indeed Reuven momentarily inherited property from the father, then now, you know, after Reuven's death, his relatives have an obligation to pay back the creditor with the land that Reuven temporarily owned. But not necessarily because Reuven would have been able to even possibly create a regular shibud on those properties. Perhaps that's impossible. So we still have no proof. But the Gemara challenges this interpretation. Maskev lo Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi asks, a minute here, according to what you're suggesting, that the obligation is not based on the conventional, you know, lien obligation that comes from a loan document, but rather it's this rabbinic obligation to take care of the father's debts. But according to that, milva al pehu, such an obligation will have no greater strength than a typical document that's done orally and not recorded in a shtar, not recorded in any document. Because again, you're not saying it comes from the lien in the document. You're saying it's this rabbinic obligation to pay back debts from the deceased. The problem is, if you're talking about essentially something that's like a debt conducted orally, Rabu Shmuel Amri Tarvayu Milval Peh, Rav and Shmuel said that if the debt was conducted orally, the creditor has no right to go after the Yarshin. We can't go after the orphans to collect for that loan. So while there might be a mitzvah on them to take care of the father's debts, the creditor has no halachic ability to go and seize property from these Yarshin. Unless you say that this case has the status of a lien that's coming from the document, which again would prove that ikni works, that apparently the document did have the power to cover even the future properties, so the proof should return. Turning to Amid Beis, the Gemara now rejects the proof a different way. The Gemara says, Eloha Mani. It's a reason we could say, who is the author of our Mishnah? Rimeir here, the Mishnah goes like Rimeir, the Amar Adam Machne Davar Shaloba Lolam. As we said above, in general holds that it's fine, you could do a kinyan even on something that doesn't exist yet. We said above that certainly according to Rimeir, there'd be no problem with the concept of ikni. The borrower could say, and let the lien go on properties that I will purchase, so that even if I subsequently sell those or bequeath those, you're able to seize those. We said, of course, Rimeir would have no problem with that. So if the Mishnah is going to look at Rimeir, doesn't tell us anything about what the Rabbanan would say. So we remain with the Shmuel's question, what would the Rabbanan say about Ikni? So the Gemara attempts another proof. Umar of Yaakov minahar pakud mishmei the Ravina toshma. Come and hear a proof in the following Mishnah in Shvius. Says the Mishnah in Shvius, the halacha is shtarei chov hamukdamin psulin. Loan documents that are predated. The document states that the loan was made before the actual date of the loan are psulin. Those are totally not valid because such a loan document can be used to unlawfully seize property from a purchaser that had purchased property after the date in the document but before the actual loan. So it's not fair. Really, those properties are not subject to the lien. But using this shtar that falsely says the loan predated the purchase, the lender is going to be able to seize the property from the purchasers. So such a document is totally not valid. V'ham'ucharin, a post-dated loan document that says the loan occurred in February when it really happened in January. K'sherim, those are perfectly fine. Because the only person that stands to lose from this document is the lender, who obviously authorized the document. Now he's more limited in terms of the purchasers he can collect from. He won't be able to use the document to collect from purchasers before February, even though rightfully he should be able to get from any January purchasers after the loan. But if he agreed to the shtar, then he agreed. It's his own loss. You know, he is accepting loss on himself. It's not our problem. So that document is fine. And the Mishnah simply says that a post-dated document is fine. The Mishnah implies that the lender may therefore use that document to collect any properties that he may have sold after the date stated in the document. It implies even if you're talking about land that he only purchased after the actual loan, as long as he sold it after the date stated in the loan, he may seize those properties. So the Gemara says, V'isak edaitach di'ikni kana umachar di'ikni kana v'horish lo mishtabed. Again, if we say that ikni does not work, and the borrower cannot subject properties that he will purchase for the lien, me'uchar namayk sherit. Now, how could the Mishnah say that a post-dated loan document is simply fine? I, the Iknihu. I, as we explained, it refers even to a case. The lender is going to use the document to collect properties that he only purchased after the loan. So the Mishnah seems to prove that Ikni does work. And the Gemara again answers, Hamani Rabbi Meir. He. The answer is not a proof, because we could say that Mishnah as well is going like Rabbi Meir. The Amar, the Makna Dover Shaloba Laola. He says that, yeah, sure, Ikni works. Because in general, Meir says, no problem, you can do a Kenyan even on something that doesn't exist yet. But our question still remains as far as what the Rabbanan would say. Gemara attempts another proof. Amar of Misharshia Mishmei the Rava. Tashmakam, and your proof from the following Brisa, which discusses a Mishnah in Gittin. Mishnah Gittin teaches us that if Shimon purchased land from Reuven, and Reuven guaranteed the sale, he said, if something happens, if it's seized later, I'll pay you back. And then indeed, some creditor, let's say Levi, seizes the field from Shimon. Shimon, in the meantime, had made improvements to the field. So Shimon demands not only compensation for the field, but even the improvements he made to the field. The Mishnah Gittin teaches that, yes, Shimon can collect compensation from Reuven himself, but not from Neshubadim. That is, if Reuven had sold all his property to some other purchaser, Shimon cannot go after those properties to compensate the improvements he had made to the field. So the Braisa there elaborates, the Shvach Karkos Ketzad. What exactly is this case of improvements that were made to the field? So the Braisa relates the case in detail. Harei, Shemacher Sada L'Chaveiro. Again, Reuven, let's say, sold the field to Shimon. V'Yishbicha. And Shimon made improvements to the field. U'ba Balcho V'Tarfa. Then Reuven's creditor came along and seized the field from Shimon. The Mishnah is teaching that the halacha is Kishihu Gove. When Shimon now collects compensation for his loss, Goves HaKeren Minachasin Mishubadin. Though as far as the principle, the field itself, for that, Shimon could even go after purchasers who had purchased land from Reuven after Reuven had guaranteed this sale to Shimon. But as far as V'Yasashvach, as far as getting compensation for improvements that Shimon made to this field, Minachasin B'Nechorin, Shimon can only collect from property that's still by his debtor, by Reuven himself, guaranteed the sale. He cannot go after Lekuchos who had purchased properties from Reuven. It's clearly a given in the Mishnah that Reuven's creditor, who seizes the field from Shimon, even has the right to seize the improvements that Shimon made to the field. So Misharshi points out that Ve'isak idaitach, the Ikni kana umacher, the Ikni kana ve'horish lo mishtabed. If Ikni does not work, if a debtor simply is not able to say that I'm going to subject even future properties to this lien, to the lien that you, Mr. Creditor, will have on me for this debt, if such a thing is not possible, Bal Chov Amai Go V'Shvacha. Why does the Mishnah assume that Reuven's creditor was allowed to take, has the right to collect, even the improvements that Shimon made to the field, when obviously, by definition, Reuven did not own those improvements at the time he took the loan out from his creditor? They were created later by Shimon, his purchaser. So apparently we have to say that if the loan document between Reuven and his creditor included a clause of Ikni, that Reuven agreed that even the future properties will be subject to the lien, apparently that works. Well, that's what we understand. Now Reuven's creditor can go after whatever's there, even the improvements that were created later. So it seems to prove that Ikni works, but again the Gemara deflects by saying that Homani Rabbi Meir he, the Amrana Makna Davar Shaloba Liola. Again, we could say that Mishnah, that Bryce is going like Rabbi Meir, so fine. Rabbi Meir, of course, validates Ikni, but we have our question. According to the Rabbanan, who say that in general you can't do a kinyan on something that doesn't exist yet, our question is whether they would accept the idea of subjecting future properties to a lien. The Gemara asks a further question. Says the Gemara, Imtimsa Lomar, assuming that the answer to Shmuel's question is the Ikni Kana Umachar, the Ikni Kana Vehorish Lo Mishtabed, if you say the answer is you can't do such a thing, according to the Rabbanan, you can't subject future properties to a lien, so then Hala Mishtabed, then that settles that, and there's nothing further to discuss, and Ikni, the answer would be simply doesn't work. But the Gemara says, Imtimsa Lomar Mishtabed, if we say that the answer to Shmuel's question is that Ikni works, and even according to the Rabbanan, a person could subject even yet-to-be-purchased properties to a lien, we can then ask the following question. What if Lava V'Lava V'Chazar V'Kana? What if a borrower borrowed money twice? Let's say Reuven and Shimon. Levi borrowed money from Reuven and Shimon. And each time he included a clause that says, even my future properties will be subject to the lien. Both loans are due on the same dates. And in the interim, before the loan became due, the debtor, Levi in our example, had purchased property and then he sold it. And then when the loans became due, he defaulted on both loans. Mahu, what is the halacha here? L'kama mishtabed or l'basar mishtabed? Which of these two creditors have a right to go ahead and seize the property from the purchaser? Of course, you could argue that you should go to the first creditor. Whoever lent the money first, he should have precedence here. He should be able to seize the property. On the other hand, you could argue that maybe the second lien should have primacy here, because the fact is that at the time of the second loan, this borrower still had not purchased any property. So maybe, therefore, the clause he made with the first lender was not so meaningful because it didn't take hold on anything. It didn't have any property for the lien to go on yet. And so now, essentially, with the second lender, he is saying, like, the lien should shift from the first lender, and the second lender should now have the real lien on any subsequent properties that he purchases. So according to that, it would be the second lender that would have the right to seize the properties here. So the Gemara says, Amar of Nachman, Hamilsa, Yibayla, we asked this question to the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, Veshalchum Mitam, they sent the response from there, from Eretz Yisrael, they answered that Rishon Kana, the halacha is, the first of the two lenders has the primacy, has the precedence here to seize the property from the purchaser, because he said Ikni to that first lender first. But Rav Huna says a third view, that Yachloko. Rav Huna argues that the halacha here is they split the land in question. For Rav Huna argues that, again, since at the time of the agreement the debtor didn't have any land, so Rav Huna says, therefore, after these two agreements were made, once he eventually purchases land, then both liens should go into effect on that land simultaneously, both at once. And so they have an equal claim to the land, and therefore the halacha is yachloki, they split it. Gemara says, v'chein tani rabba baravua, and so rabba baravua taught. Yachloki also said, the halacha here is yachloki, they split it. Amar Ravina, Ravina said, madura kama de Ravashi. First time Rav Ashi taught, Shasi taught the Talmud, Amr Lan Rishon Kana. When he went through this subject, he originally taught, like Rav Nachman said from the Shalchan Bitan from Eretz Yisrael, that the first creditor gets the lien. And Madura Basra the Rav Ashi, the second time around, Rav Ashi taught the old Talmud again, Amr Lan Yachloku. Second time he taught, like Rav Huna said, like Rabbi Baravua said, that the halacha is the two creditors would split the land in question. And the Gemara now says, V'hilchasa yachloku, the halacha is, these two creditors would split the land. Their liens came into effect simultaneously, so they have equal claims here, they split the land. The Gemara questions this conclusion. Meisve, they ask from the Braisa we learned above, which said, L'shvach karkos keitzad. The Braisa explained the Mishnah Gittin's halacha about collecting, you know, compensation for the improvements that Shimon had made to the land he had purchased from Reuven with a guarantee. Now he wants compensation not only for the land but the improvements as well. So the Braisa describes the whole case. Harei shemachar sada lechavera v'ishbicha. Once upon a time, Shimon purchased the field from Reuven and made improvements to it. Now Reuven guaranteed, if anything happens, I'll pay you back. And lo and behold, ubab achov v'tarfa. Reuven's creditor came and seized the land away from Shimon. The halacha is kishu gove sekerim nechasim mishubadin. Shimon collects compensation for the principal, the land itself, even from nechasim mishubadin, meaning even if Reuven had sold his land to somebody else subsequently, Shimon could go after that. V'yas hashvach minechasim b'necharin. But as far as compensation for the improvements, he can't go after the purchasers for that, only from Reuven himself. So says the Braisa. So the Gemara views this situation as essentially the same kind of case that we discussed above of the two creditors. For here as well, you of course have Reuven's creditor, who first had a lien on Reuven, and not only on what Reuven has, but on what Reuven will have, and even, and includes even if it was land that he sold to somebody else, and that other person makes improvements to the land, Reuven's creditor has a lien on that. And, of course, Shimon has a lien on the improvements. Once they're taken away, he has a lien on Reuven that says, hey, the shvach I've taken away, so I have a lien on you to compensate me for those lost improvements. But Shimon is the second creditor. And yet the Braisa simply states that Shimon could get, seems, full compensation for those lost improvements. So the Gemara says, v'imissa, if the above ruling is true, that no, if it's two creditors and they split the property that the debtor acquired after he incurred the debt, and chatzi shvach mi boile, the Braisa ought to have said that Shimon gets half, and Reuven's creditor gets the other half. The Gemara answers, my govin nami diktani, indeed. What does the Braisa mean when it says Shimon could collect for those lost improvements? It means chatzi shvach, it means his portion, the half that's left after Reuven's creditor takes his half. So actually, the Braisa fits perfectly fine with the halacha that we established above.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.